Books with Aaron, Polly, and Wayne. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And this is Wayne.
Guys, had a huge construction project at the house this week. You know, replaced all the windows, the exterior doors. It was a big to-do, so of course, I took the dogs to doggy daycare. And when I went to pick them up the first day, Elmer, my dachshund, has a little, just a tiny little bald spot on the back of his neck. And the guy as he's bringing Elmer out, he says, "Hey, what's up with that bald spot on the back of his neck?" I said, "You know, I don't know. He's always had that. I originally thought that maybe his collar was too tight." And I said, "But that's not the case. I don't know what that's all about." And he goes, Oh. And he kind of looks at Elmer and looks back at me and he says, "Is he adopted?" And I slowly look at him and I said, "No, he's my biological dog." "Is he adopted?" Yeah. "He is from the fruit of my loins."
Yes. No, he was birthed naturally.
I do introduce my dogs, though, as "This is my dog Elmer, my dog Alice, and my adopted dog Flip."
and my half dog Flip.
So I am convinced that the doggy daycare place is a front to launder money, because they offer their first day is free, right? And so there was no charge their first day. Dogs stayed there all day, went and picked them up, no charge. Went and picked them up the second day, no charge. I'm like,
what?
I don't know how you guys stay in business. I mean, I sat there at the desk and the guy goes, "You're good." And I said, "Don't I owe you something?" And he's like, "No, you're good." Okay. I am convinced that there is heavy drug money running through that place. I'm just convinced of it. But I'll be taking the dogs back because it's a good deal.
Yeah, well, exactly, because it's free.
There's a little less drug money because there's no Aaron Head money going through it.
That's right. That's right. Not my drug money. Yeah. Good Lord.
Well, you know, guys, I have two things to start this podcast with. One, we don't have to pretend that Andrew's going to come on at some point in the podcast, because we know Andrew informed us after last week's debacle of being
debacle.
Late.
It was a debacle.
After his last few weeks of being late, he's chosen to abstain from this week's podcast. So we don't even need to pretend.
Stupid
at some
Andrew.
Point Andrew may join us.
Yeah.
But in more important news, I don't know if you guys saw this, and it's not on the outline. I'm immediately going off outline because I forgot.
Jeez Louise.
I know. Is that, I don't know if you guys saw this, but they have hired a director for the next James Bond film. And Wayne probably doesn't care. I don't think Wayne.
Yeah, I don't think Wayne's ever seen the James Bond movie. Yeah,
but, I have never seen a James Bond movie still.
Yeah. But yeah, they hired Denis Villeneuve.
I believe that is pronounced Denis Villeneuve.
Oh, Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah.
Which is probably more accurate because I don't think he's
he ain't from around here.
Yeah, he ain't from around here. So, you know, he is known obviously more recently for directing the two Dune movies.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to that, he's directed a number of films, including Arrival.
God, and I love that movie.
Sicario, the first Sicario, which I think is an amazing movie and more in line with, you know, with I think what we would expect from a James Bond kind of film versus.
And apparently he's a lifelong Bond fan. So I like that he's approaching the franchise as someone who has enjoyed the franchise.
Yeah.
And he's also somebody who doesn't have to do franchise work. This guy's an auteur. So I like that, you know, keep in mind, Steven Spielberg was campaigned to do the Superman movie back in 78, wanted it hard. And they said no. And then Jaws came out and they said, "Hey, we'd love to get you for Superman." And he said, "Nah." Because he didn't need to do franchise work anymore. He could go out and do his own thing. I think it's great that Denis Villeneuve is such a big fan that he's willing to put up with, you know, ownership of the franchise and do that. Because, you know, he could totally go out there and do his own thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And You know, apparently he was the first choice, or the this is after negotiations with Chris Nolan, kind of fell through because he wanted Final Cut.
Right.
And apparently that was a deal breaker for the owners of the franchise.
Amazon MGM.
Amazon MGM. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, here's the thing. I have a confession. I have still not seen Dune Part 2.
Did you like Dune Part 1?
I thought it was fine.
I think you'll find that Dune Part 2 is also fine.
Yeah, that's the thing for me. And I know you guys are, and I know Aaron is a big Dune guy. I'm not. For something about that story, that franchise feels cold to me in a way that I can't attach to. Like I find other science fiction stories.
I would agree with that, Paul. And I find the book's writing to be very dry.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's all intentional. I get that. And it works for some people. It's just not, for some reason, it never connected with me as a franchise.
I feel like Wayne's dry comment was a pun that we did not appropriately acknowledge.
It is both true and a pun. Yes.
So, I don't know. So, I mean, yeah, I think he's a solid director. I've honestly, funny enough, I've seen Dune, I've seen Sicario, and I've seen Arrival. I never actually saw Blade Runner 2049 or whatever.
I haven't either.
I think out of those, the only one I've seen is Arrival.
I think of his films, Arrival is the one that speaks the most to me. Now, don't get me wrong. I think Sicario is a great movie. I'm very entertained by Sicario. But I think the Arrival is probably the best science fiction movie to come out in the last 20 years. It's the science. Most original, most thoughtful. It's real hard science.
It's science fiction that just hits me right where I like my science fiction.
Same. And I think the next great science fiction movie will likely be Hail Mary, which comes out next year.
Ooh, yeah. I had not heard that. I saw that coming out. I'm excited because I enjoyed that book a lot. Yeah. I didn't enjoy it as much as The Martian.
Same.
But I still, for what it was, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I hear really good things about the Hail Mary movie from people who've seen it. So
yeah, but it's got Ryan Gosling in it, so I pretty much expect it to be mediocre like everything else he does.
You know, I think that it will. I hope that the movie will be good despite Mr. Gosling. So that's what I'm hoping for.
Now, the first trailer is funny you mention it because I actually have saved this. The first trailer will be released Monday. I'm assuming it's playing in theaters right now if you see F1.
Mm.
But the first trailer will be online on Monday. It's directed by Drew Goddard. Drew Goddard, I believe he did the first Cloverfield. He's done a number. That's the one that speaks to me. Yeah, he did Cloverfield. He did Cabin in the Woods.
Did J.J. Abrams not direct the first Cloverfield?
No, he produced it.
Huh. For some reason, I thought he directed that. Okay. I'll let it go. I'm letting it go. There you go.
So we'll see. Drew Goddard has a pretty decent pedigree. And
he does.
I know you guys are Andy Weir fans. So.
Yeah, but no, I am cautiously optimistic that it will be a good movie.
Well, you know, we were talking about like science fiction that we don't connect with. And this kind of leads me into... I finished a show this week, and I wanted to bring it up because I've not started Ironheart yet. And, of course, Squid Game Part 3 came out this week, so I clearly won't start Ironheart this week. But I did finish the first season out on Prime Video.
Mm.
And
I know Wayne's a big fan.
Yeah, it is my favorite video game franchise. So I already came in loving the universe and the world.
Yeah, see, I was not familiar with any of it going in. So it was definitely like, I wouldn't say alarming, just a new show, right? Just like any new universe, and it's post-apocalyptic, and you get caught up pretty quickly. And one of the things I did not know going in, I knew very little about it going in. I also did not know that this was a Jonathan Nolan joint. Chris Nolan's brother, also known for being one of the key people who did Westworld.
I absolutely love the first season of Westworld. There are more than one season, of course.
Yeah.
But the later seasons, I just couldn't get into the same way. But I love the first one. And I love the original Westworld, the movie.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I was always curious about the TV show. It just, I think it premiered at a time when there was just so much TV and I just never got around to it. And it was so long in between seasons. And, you know, I try not to get too invested much in shows that have like a mystery that's going to take multiple seasons to solve, because it's burned me too many times to never understand how that mystery is going to resolve. But, you know, I will say, I watched the first season of Fallout. It is definitely, well done, well written, well acted. You know, the money is on the screen. It took me a little while to give a damn about any of the characters. And I think, obviously, I think that's intentional. But, you know, it kind of goes back to, like we talked about Dune with, you know, some of the cultness. And I feel like every character is either flawed or quirky to the point that it took me a few episodes to really get into, to really embrace any of them. And I got there about halfway through the season. But, like, it was...
And that is very... That's very much a setting thing. Every character in that setting should be flawed and quirky.
Yeah, but it's quite good. And, Walton Goggins has gotten all the praise for it, and deservedly so. You know, I've been a Walton Goggins guy for a long time. Obviously, Aaron has, because of Justified.
Damn straight.
But I feel like people are really even though Justified was on for like 6 years or something like that. I feel like Walton Goggins is in his heyday right now because of Fallout and White Lotus. Well, kind of hitting at the same time.
Isn't he in that, it's another HBO show where he plays some pastor or something? I've never watched
it. Oh, The Righteous Gemstones. That's right. He's on that also.
Yeah.
So, Paul, a fan of the video games, the last scene of the show probably didn't mean anything to you as they're going off into the distance.
Oh, yeah.
But that is a direct setup for the next season where they're going to Vegas.
Oh, is that what that was? Okay.
Yep. Because one of the video games was Fallout New Vegas, and it was probably the best writing of all of the games. It was done by a different studio, actually. Hmm. And it is interesting because the other Fallout games, you're exploring the real world and seeing, you know, what came of the world after the bombing. You can going through DC, for example, you can find the White House and all these buildings. But when they go to Vegas, they don't own the rights to the names of those casinos. So they couldn't do that in Vegas. Vegas, they had to create all of their own casinos and things. And it has a very strong story to it. So any Fallout fans are extremely excited that that's where the next season's going, to get to see that setting.
Yeah, you know, and I enjoyed it. You know, I the only reason I watched it, you know, it... A post-apocalyptic entertainment for me, it's like, okay, you know, we've seen so many things, it's hard to do something new. It's kind of like zombie entertainment. What else new is there? But obviously, like I mentioned, they're doing a haunted house this year at Halloween Horror Nights. So I'm like, okay, let me understand what this show is all about. And I'm glad I checked it out. I did enjoy it. You know, when season two comes out, I don't think it will be appointment television for me, but I will watch it because I'm curious about how the story goes next. But Aaron, speaking of television, you are the only person, and not intentionally, like I said, I just ran out of time, to have seen Ironheart. And you said you saw all three episodes.
All three episodes.
And we don't just meet on the podcast. You're probably the only person in the world that's watched it.
Well, let me first say, before I start criticizing, I think it's actually very well made. I think that it's, you know, well produced, well shot, well acted. It's well written. I disagree with some choices that were made. But I got to say, I mean, it doesn't look like they skimped on the budget. The Ironheart suit effects are very well done. I heard some criticism going into it that she doesn't spend enough time in the suit, but at least in these three episodes, she's in the suit quite a bit. And so there's no skimping on suit effects. And, you know, I actually really thought that the special effects and the overall direction and cinematography were very effective. So I'll back up a little bit and say, you know, my experience with the Ironheart character begins with the Bendis books. And I really like those first couple of volumes of her story. I really like Riri. I think it is a really interesting sort of take on the, you know, engineer genius. And I always, you know, I was like, I don't know how this character works post Tony Stark, right? Because so much of her character is about Tony Stark finding her working in the garage in the comic book. And I think what you find, what I find in these three episodes is that the character is at a loss. And you know, and that's part of the story, you know, she's unmoored, she's trying to figure out, you know, how she funds her, you know, work, you know, because she's not doing something that's, you know, cheap work. She's, you know, she needs expensive parts to make things happen. And that's kind of her solution to that is really frustrating. She decides to join up with a group of thieves and, you know, they become sort of this, you know, group of criminals ripping off, you know, billionaires, you know, and she's spending her cut on, you know, funding her armor projects. And I really object to that. In doing this, they've made the character small. And they fundamentally adjusted her character because, you know, characters like Tony Stark and Riri Williams are engineers, which, you know, really gets to a level of what they are at their core are problem solvers. They're creative problem solvers. They think outside the box. And the fact that they put her in a box, you know, that the only way she can fund her projects is to, you know, commit crime, is really jarring, particularly when she has made friends in, you know, in the Marvel Universe in Wakanda. You know, why she can't pick up the phone and call her friends in Wakanda and say, hey, you know, I really need some vibranium and buying that stuff is cost prohibitive. Maybe you guys could hook me up or maybe you want to give me a grant to fund my, lab. You know, I don't feel like they made a strong enough case that she would just go ahead and, you know, become a criminal when she has fought side by side with heroes. I found that super frustrating about this. And, you know, so I said they make her character small, and they do the same with another one of my favorite Bendis characters from the Marvel books, which is the Hood. The Hood is so dangerous and dark, and they make him kind of goofy, and they make him younger than he ought to be. In fact, they really age him down and make him far less threatening than he really is in the book.
They make him young to make him about her age, I'm guessing.
A little bit older than her, yeah. And I just find that super frustrating. And then her gang, and I don't mean to turn into an old white guy, you know, complains about the wokeness. That is not what this is. But it is annoying that everybody on the gang is, you know, representative. You know, you've got the trans person, you've got the gender ambiguous person. I mean, it's just all of these different sort of groups I feel like we're serving, and it just seems so transparent, and yet not a white guy in the bunch, you know. You've got this you know, just very mixed sort of you know, not just racially, but you know, gender preference and whatnot. And I'm just like, what are you doing? You know, if you're going to have diversity on the screen, maybe actually be diverse, you know, instead of just leaning into, you know, those things that, you know, are craving sight. And I found it just annoying every time it came up on the screen, not because I object to any of it, but it just, it felt like I was watching an episode of new Star Trek, right?
Yeah, like Star Trek Discovery. I was thinking the same thing.
I felt like Blue Del Barrio was going to come walking on the screen any moment, you know? And I'm just like, come on. All of that said, those are just things that annoy me about the show. I do think it's very well made. In fact, I started watching episode one last night, assuming I was going to hate it because of things that I had heard. I didn't at all. I actually was very entertained, but I do feel like the character that Bendis wrote is not represented on the screen. I feel like and it surprises me, you know, this is Ryan Coogler executive produces this thing. And it surprises me that he would have supported some of these choices. And maybe he was real hands-off. Maybe he wasn't that involved. And it's just they've got his name for sales purposes. But I was very frustrated that, you know, come on. You know, she is an engineer. She solves problems. She is a creative thinker. She wouldn't have just gone straight into Life of Crime. You know, because how do you, after you've done these things, how do you then go and fight beside Wakandans who are above all that shit? You know, I don't know how you see yourself as a peer when you have, you know, dropped to a life of crime. And even though you're not killing people, you're hurting people in the process, people who are just out there doing their job. You know, she is fundamentally a bad person, in my opinion now. And I don't think that's what the show intends. And I don't know how she corrects that going forward.
Well, it's only six episodes. Okay. Yep. So the other three will be released next week.
I think it's a week to week after this.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I would assume they, like the way they've been doing these shows, they drop a bunch at first and then week to week after that because they know their show can't stand on just one episode drop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I will give it a shot. You know, I think it's, you know, this is one show that Marvel kind of held on for a while. I believe this was actually produced quite a bit ago, you know, and indicative of a time when Marvel was making decisions probably more based on getting content released than in actually focusing on quality, you know, less content, more quality, which is kind of their focus right now. And I think they held on to this one, much like, right, I think they held on to Echo for a while. They held on to this one for a while and, you know, they had it in the back burner. And I think what they really kind of did, if I'm being honest, is I don't know that this would have ever seen the light of day if Sinners hadn't been such a monumental hit for Ryan Coogler and they could take advantage of that name while the iron's hot. That's funny. I mean, I could obviously be wrong in all that, but, you know, this is, to my knowledge, you know, in some undisclosed time period after Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, and not really, you know, specific to what the universe, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe right now, just because it was filmed before even some of the current projects that are coming out. So, I mean, I'll check it out. Like I said, you know, I'm a Ryan Coogler fan.
I don't know how much of his fingerprints are on this. I truly don't. I just keep wanting to say I was entertained. I think it's a good show. I'm frustrated by some of the choices.
Yeah, I will watch it as well. I took a cheap shot at it early on, but to be fair to the character, I've never read her original series. Mm-hmm. So I don't have that appreciation that you did for the character. Mm-hmm. And that Wakanda Forever movie was terrible.
Oh, it was. It was god awful. So
yeah, and it was shockingly bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know.
Also a Ryan Coogler joint. So
also a Ryan Coogler joint. Yeah, but Sinners is excellent. And you know, if you haven't seen it yet, it's coming out on HBO time soon. I think next month.
So Paul, as of this recording, I've been seeing so much about that. What is Sinners?
Have you ever seen From Dusk Till Dawn?
Yes, love it.
It's basically From Dusk Till Dawn. Except it's you know, it's set in Prohibition era. Michael B. Jordan plays brothers. He plays both brothers. It's not a George Clooney, Quentin Tarantino situation. It's Michael B. Jordan plays both twin brothers. And they are setting up essentially like a, you know, a speakeasy, you know, type thing back in the day. You know, that's the first half of the movie is them rounding up their friends and the talent to like play a concert and stuff at this, you know, joint that they're opening up. And about halfway through the movie, vampires show up, and then the second half is them trying to survive the night. It is if you are a fan of From Dusk Till Dawn,
it's very
similar to From Dusk Till Dawn. It is excellent.
That pitch has sold me. I want to watch this now.
Yeah, it is definitely worth watching. And you know, it does some unique things. You know, I think part of the aspect of it, and I'm not spoiling much, that isn't already spoiled in the trailers, is just how has the ability to transcend time and space, and you know, like, and that's part of the story. And so a lot of emphasis on music in the movie. The score is by forget his name. He's got a Ludwig Göransson, I think, maybe the guy who does the Mandalorian music and stuff like that. So it's, you know, music's great, acting's great, you know, the film direction's great. It I highly recommend it. And like I said, you know, it's, if you're, and he even says it's inspired by Robert Rodriguez movies, and you can tell. So good stuff. But guys, I know we've spent, you know, the first half of this podcast talking about Marvel and streaming and things like that. But this week we're all technically actually about DC. You know,
I'm excited.
Me too. Because they've released a new history of the DC universe, which I'm looking forward to talking about. But before we do, online, I came across some online discourse, as the social media is known for, in that people were trying to determine their DC Mount Rushmore, right? And in heroes, villains is probably a separate conversation. Probably, honestly, maybe a little bit more more of a conversation, but we'll start with heroes for this week, because, you know, in a DC Mount Rushmore, obviously the DC Trinity makes sense, starts, right? You know, you've got Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman as your Trinity, but there are four spots on Mount Rushmore. And the fourth spot is what there's a lot of online discourse about, is who is, you know, in the DC universe, who is the fourth spot? Is it Green Lantern? Is it Martian Manhunter? Is it Cyborg? We know it's not Cyborg. Spoilers. And I was curious who you guys would put as your fourth top tier, you know, like hero for the DC universe.
Well, I have a hot take for you, Paul.
I say you definitely didn't name mine with any of those.
I have a hot take too, and I'm curious if we have a similar hot take.
Well, my hot take is, you know, you presuppose that, you know, three of the spots are already taken. And, you know, certainly I think we could all agree that Superman and Batman have their place up on the Mount Rushmore. But I would suggest that Wonder Woman does not. I think that she is there because, you know, folks, you know, feel like a woman should be represented. But I think if you look at the history of DC Comics, she does not shape stories that span across titles nearly as much as other characters. And that has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, comics centering around women generally don't have the staying selling power that comics centered around male characters do. And I'm not saying that's right. I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying that's the way things are. You know, that Wonder Woman has certainly had some brilliant storytelling, you know, through the years. But it's the exception, not the rule, in my opinion.
Now that you mentioned that, the more I think about it, I think Supergirl has had more impact on stories than Wonder Woman has.
I think I have certainly read
Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Right? Yeah, and I could say that I have read more Supergirl stories than I have read Wonder Woman stories. You know, but I'm not sure. Here's, you know, adjacent to this hot take, I'm not sure there's a woman I would put on the Mount Rushmore of the DC universe. If I am just, you know, looking at who influences story, who has shaped the universe.
Yeah. Then I would choose, you know, that's a good point. If we were to start from scratch,
mm-hmm.
then I think, yes, absolutely. Batman, Superman. But, you know, I kind of presumed the Trinity, but if we decide to start from scratch, then yeah. I already know who my other two would be.
Mm-hmm.
And Wonder Woman wouldn't be one of them.
Well, why don't we start with one and we'll go around the table. Can we all agree that we're removing Wonder Woman from the mountain?
Yeah. Well, I think. Okay. I was about to say I don't want to speak for Wayne. I figured we could.
Okay. I felt like Wayne was in agreement. So okay. let's talk about spot number three. And Paul, go ahead and get us started.
I'm going to go Fruit because I feel like my fourth one may be more controversial mm-hmm. than this one. Flash. I think the Flash has done more to shape the DC universe than either Superman or Batman, you know, and as we currently know it. And don't get me wrong, I mean, Superman really deserved to be number one and two. I mean, we're not really speaking in hierarchical format, but I think Flash, you know, obviously every crisis, you know, is informed by the Flash. We would not have a multiverse were it not for Flash, you know, and I'm not the specific character, but yeah, I would put the Flash as my third character on the Mount Rushmore of DC. How about you, Wayne?
Well, he's my third as well. And even if you've hit all the major reasons, I mean, he's involved in every crisis. You don't have a crisis without a Flash dying. He also is, again, the one that introduced the multiverse. He was one of the, when you look at outside of comics even, you know, he's one of the characters that is key to having things like the Arrowverse. Even though it was built around Arrow, all the superhero stuff was built around Flash. And the Flash TV show was one of the original one was one of the better comic TV shows of its time, like of everything that came before it. He is the heart of the team for any Justice League team. And it was a no-brainer for me. When I thought we only had one to pick, he was the one I picked.
So my third is also the Flash. And, you know, for all the reasons you guys said, I almost feel like, though, that, you know, there should be, you know, in that third spot, you should see, like, you know, three different iterations of the Flash, right? It should be Jay Garrick, Barry Allen, and Wally West, you know, kind of, you know, the three faces of the Flash, IMO, just because, you know, of all the heavy lifting Flashes have done throughout DC history.
Yeah, no, fair point. All three, right? I think all three, I mean, certainly have a place up there. But, okay, so we all agree on Flash. Mm-hmm. I'm curious with four, because my fourth spot would be taken by Nightwing.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
I thought about that. You know,
make your case, Chief. Make your case.
You know, Nightwing... The evolution of Nightwing for me is something that we Robin, let me clarify, into Nightwing is something that we have not seen in a, you know, from either of the big two ever. Outside of Nightwing, which is we actually saw, you know, this character that started out as a sidekick grow into an adult, form his own identity, and have as much of an impact on the universe as, you know, the lead guy, right? I mean, I think Nightwing, and I'm not just speaking because of the Tom Taylor run. Nightwing is a character I've been reading since, you know, the Scott McDaniel art days, and even before then, right? Nightwing is a character I've essentially grown up with Nightwing as long as I've grown up with Batman and Superman. And I think he is as much a heart, the heart of the DC universe, you know, maybe because I haven't enjoyed Flash much in recent years. I think Nightwing has taken that place. But, you know, the guy who's led the Teen Titans, who's led the Outsiders, who's led the Justice League for a bit. You know, I think Nightwing is something unique in comic books. And it's a character that's been allowed to evolve and not fully revert back to a status quo, despite tons of reboots in the same way that other characters have. And that's, for me, I think Nightwing sets the standard for sidekicks, you know, and as that first sidekick, I think he changed comic books. So that's why Nightwing for me.
I can see that, you know, we've had, you know, what, 45 years of Dick Grayson as Nightwing, you know, since Marv Wolfman and George Perez's run on the Teen Titans. And I think it was even Nightwing. But outside the Teen Titans, but you know, in a break there, but you know, because he started off as Robin with the Titans. But you know, I think that that's fair. He's not my choice for number four. My choice for number four would be Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern. I like your comments about Flash. There's some uneven storytelling, but I think that if we're looking hard at each of these heroes, there's some uneven storytelling all the way around.
Yeah.
But I think that Hal Jordan has certainly driven a lot of story. not just in recent memory, but, you know, when I think about the work that Dick Giordano and Neil Adams did in the 70s with the Hard Traveling Heroes, Green Arrow and Green Lantern, those were terrific genre-bending stories, you know, really talking about the experience across America, beyond, you know, all of the, you know, sci-fi shenanigans that, you know, Hal would get into out in space with the Corps. You know, you had those stories, but, you know, Hal's been involved in so many different corners of the DC universe and, you know, partnering with different individuals, the DC canon. I really feel like, you know, the space cop Hal Jordan deserves a place on the Mount Rushmore of DC Comics.
Yeah, for me, I've never cared for Hal, and I think that is actually colors my opinion around not having him on my list. My Green Lantern will always be Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that mine may not seem as strong, but I am going with Supergirl. Because when I think over the years of stories, her original stories were different. She was the secret weapon of Superman. But she's a character that has allowed to evolve over the years and have all these different costumes and types. I'm not a fan of the current costume. She was so important. Her death was a driving force in Crisis on Infinite Earths. Some of the stuff they did with the Matrix Supergirl was just top tier storytelling. But when they brought her back and they do the whole storyline in Superman Batman, that informed stories for the next couple years around all of those characters and Wonder Woman.
Well, I would actually argue, I mean, I think they're all good choices. I think James Gunn probably would agree with you, Wayne, because, you know, we're getting a Supergirl movie before anything else in the DC universe except Superman, right? And it, of course, makes sense. In my mind, you start with Batman, but makes sense. You start with, you know, I get it. He wants to start with Superman, but he went into Supergirl as his second movie. And I think, yeah, to your point, he's trying to consider sort of top tier. And it's already filmed, right? So, I mean, I think, you know, I'm very curious, you know, for our listeners, who they would have as their fourth spot on the DC Mount Rushmore, because it sounds like we're all in agreement, Batman, Superman, Flash. Fourth one, yep. We're in disagreement. I think all of us made, well, I mean, I don't want to pat myself on the back, but I think all of us made decent cases.
You know, I think
And Hal Jordan was a tough, because I almost went Hal Jordan, Aaron. I really did.
Yeah.
But I was like, you know, Nightwing for me, I think is a character that I love even more than Hal Jordan.
I think there is also a discussion bearing merit around, you know, not who has shaped the most DC history, who has shaped and driven stories across the books. But I think there's also a conversation about who do we think they ought to be? You know, who do we think ought to be on the Mount Rushmore? You know, that we wish that their books were more successful and drove more story, that we like the character so much that it's how we wish things were versus how things are. And I think that's what we talked about.
Goals.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that you could have a conversation. For me, Jack Knight Starman would be on my things the way I wish they were, right? And I think that you would be far more likely you know, to be able to add a female character. Like for me, Supergirl would be up there on that Mount Rushmore. I think that Black Canary might be on that Mount Rushmore for me, because they're characters I love. I just don't get enough of them in really great stories, and they just don't drive enough story across the other books.
Yeah, you know what I find painful right now? You have the whole Superman family where they bring out every character that has anything to do with the S-Shield from around the world, from throughout history, and we still don't get the Matrix Supergirl back.
Yeah.
Why couldn't they have brought her back as well?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, storylines fall out of favor, right? And I feel like the Matrix Supergirl has fallen out of favor. And I don't get that. Because I really enjoyed I enjoyed the story that was told with her in the S.H.I.E.L.D. books back in the day, but I also enjoyed the work that Peter David did with the character.
Yeah, and her final issues, like her finale, is, I think, the best finale of any book I can think of.
Yeah.
With that final storyline of her going back to the pre-crisis and living life up to the crisis.
Yeah.
That was such a good story.
Well, yeah. Maybe when we... when we talk about the next few issues of the DC, his new history of the DC universe, we can talk about, you know, I'm already thinking about my villain, Mount Rushmore, right? And I have three I'm pretty confident about, but again,
well, and are they all Batman villains?
No.
Is every single one of them a Batman
villain? No, only one of those is a Batman. But I will tell you, if any superhero were to get to, it would be Batman.
Yeah.
You know, same with Spider-Man. Like if I were to come up with a Mount Rushmore of Marvel villain, it would be more than one Spider-Man villain kind of thing. They have the most iconic rogues galleries in comics for me. But let's talk about this new history of the DC universe. You know, they do this every little bit. We have this thing of the DC universe from the beginning. You know, the most recent one, this first issue, is from writer Mark Waid, you know, features a number of different artists, including Todd Nauck, Dan Jurgens, Jerry Ordway. Todd Nauck and Jerry Ordway are the artists on this first book. Cover art by Chris Somney. I'm very, very curious what you guys thought of this book.
So I had an initial strong reaction to it that immediately changed when I got to the end. I'm reading through and there are certain things that are just being skipped over and it's making me angry because it's certain characters and things like, you know, suddenly out of nowhere, Uncle Sam shows up with no talk about him. But then I get to the back and the back of the book, you've got the story itself is being told by Barry Allen, who apparently is retired now. And he is giving the, you know, because he's traveled the multiverse or the traveled through time more than anyone else, he's giving you the story. And so it's from his perspective. But you get to the back and there's a blurb there where it talks about that, about how he told the story, grouping it into things that made sense. Here is the real timeline. And there they dig into everything and give you the actual issue and year numbers for things. And so my complaint about you know, well, where do we get the origin of Uncle Sam? Well, that's in the back pages where it talks about the first Uncle Sam, the second, the third, and all of that history. So my initial first visceral reaction of they left out so much stuff I care about, they didn't. It's just all in the back because Flash didn't care about it.
Right. There are some things in here that I'm particularly happy about, and it's really the World War II stuff. You know, one of the things I feel like is really missing from DC's lineup are the World War II comic books like Unknown Soldier, Sergeant Rock, The Losers.
The Haunted Tank?
Yes. God, I love all of that stuff. And it's even hard to pick it up, you know, collected, you know, just the old stuff. You know, there's not like a great omnibus out there of you know, those old books.
Yeah. The Haunted Tank really should not work, but it is such a good.
It is character. So much fun. And all of them are. And I when I started reading comics, and you know, it's all about when you started, you know, and when I started reading comics, you know, the first hero comic I read was Superman. And then I started jumping into the DC books. And one of my friends, his father was a guy who stocked magazines. And so when they would pull off the old books that hadn't sold, they'd tear the covers off and he'd send the covers back for refunds. And he would give the comics to his son. Well, his son didn't read comics, so he gave them to me. And so I didn't have the you know, actual anything that you'd bag and board, but I had the stories. And it was all of these Unknown Soldier, Tank, and Sergeant Rock. And I loved all of them. And I wound up buying because, you know, I had an opportunity. And I never thought, you know, World War II comics would be as interesting as they were. But I would get excited when I'd see a Brave and the Bold where, you know, Batman teamed up with Sergeant Rock, Batman teamed up with the Unknown Soldier. Loved those books. And, you know, I get it. and one other guy that enjoys the world. But I really wish that there was some of that here. And so as I'm reading the history, and I'm seeing that DC values that element of their history, and that they represented the whole, you know, two pages on the World War II stuff. I'm hoping that tells us something, that, you know, maybe they're signaling that maybe there's going to be a future, because I would love to see more of those stories.
Yeah, the other era I was appreciative to see was all of the Old West characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
As bad as his books tend to be, I am a huge Jonah Hex fan. Wish they could write him better.
I did really enjoy the Keith Giffen, I believe, run where Jonah Hex goes into the future. You know, and he's in a far, far dystopian future. That book was a lot of fun. But yeah, I'm right there with you. I loves me some Jonah Hex. But the thing that I dislike about this, two things. One is, you know, for the longest time, we had the origins of the DC universe as that, you know, spectral hand reaching out through time and space, sort of holding the cradle of creation in its hand. And there was always this mystery, like, whose hand is that? Is that God? Well, they explained it, you know, some time ago, that it was, you know, the hand of Cronus. And, you know, then we get additional deeper explanations, and they spend a whole book, they spend a whole page on, you know, that you've got Perpetua and the Monitor and the Anti-Monitor, you know, all from recent stories in the DC universe. And I'm like, ugh, they really could have done without that. I don't like the Anti-Monitor being there at the dawn of creation. And the Monitor being there at the dawn of creation. I want to see them, you know, more recent than that. I really hate that, and I miss the mystery of creation. You know, where everyone's wondering, what is that? You know, we go in and we answer questions that really. And I did love back in the day, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, I remember the Time Masters as they were trying to figure out, you know, whose hand is that? You know, the more you found out, kind of cursed you wound up being, you know, you'd unravel a riddle, you know, was, you know, really bad news for you. There are some things that should not be known. And I kind of like that. I kind of like that forbidden knowledge that was represented in the DC universe. I feel like we're kind of in the process of knowing, and I think that removes a lot of the myth. The second thing that I would complain about the book is, and it's not really a complaint because I knew it buying the book. It's just, it's not fun to read. You know, it's just a history. You know, and
that's,
it's not
how I felt about it. And I'd say that's probably, you know, and I get it. That's what. It's literally the history of the DC universe. You know, the retconning and stuff, the Perpetua and all that, it's fine. But, you know, I think my issue with it, and I'm going to read the book. I'm going to continue reading it because I like knowing, you know, this stuff. It makes me feel more knowledgeable about, you know, read the books that I read. I don't, for me, it's cliff notes, right? And I get it. You know, to Wayne's point, they gloss over a lot of stuff. And that's not even so much what bothered me as it is like every page just kind of feels disparate from the next one. It's like, here's one page. Here's the next page that had nothing to do with the last page. Here's another page that had nothing to do with the last page. Other than the fact that these are events told in chronological order, from page to page, there's no cohesive storytelling.
It's one era to the next without any sort of linking material.
Exactly. And maybe that's the point. I get it. But like, it is like reading the first page of every chapter in a textbook.
Well, I feel like I'm probably not picking up any additional issues, and that I'll wait and buy it collected because it's a reference book, you know. And I'd like it hardbound. I'd like it, you know, where I can pull it off the shelf and open it up like a reference book, and also be able to look at the pages. I really want to see it oversized, because the Jerry Ordway artwork in this book is amazing. We don't see near enough of Chris Somney drawing DC heroes.
Yeah.
I love that cover. That cover rocks super hard. I think I will definitely appreciate it more as a hardbound book on my shelf that I can pull down and reference from time to time. But I did not, the whole time I was this, the only reason I read this from cover to cover was that because I knew we'd be talking about it this morning. Otherwise, I would have stopped because it's not compelling reading. I think that the book is designed to say, how did that happen with, you know, Ra's al Ghul, Ra's al Ghul, however you want to pronounce the Al Ghul's name. how did that happen? You go and flip to that page and look, right? I think that is the purpose of the book versus, you know, being something that you sit down and read and enjoy the story that's being told because it's just, it's too big.
Yeah, it's a lot of, now that they've done all the retcons, what is still...
Right.
Still there, what's not there.
What's in scope, what's out of scope.
Yeah, I couldn't have imagined not getting the rest of the books until you just pointed out that it'll be much better in trade. Mm-hmm. And now I'm kind of thinking the same thing, because you're right. It would be much better to have the entire encyclopedia instead of just one volume of it.
Yeah, and I hope
they really do publish what it is an encyclopedia.
Yeah, and I do hope they publish some type of encyclopedia-looking version of this, right? I think it does, you know, obviously there are things that are retcon. There are probably also things that are hints of what's to come. That, you know, that's how these things are written. But four issues, but, you know, four oversized issues. I think this one was 43 digital pages. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think we're all aligned. I think, you know, this is probably best left for trade.
Yeah, I agree. And I will relish and enjoy having it collected. But yeah. I think I'm done buying the single issues.
Well, I know Wayne said he's done buying the single issues on Superman, but I'm still buying Superman.
As am I.
27. You know, Joshua Williamson, Eddie Barrows, you know, on the art. And so this, oh, Eddie Barrows, Eber Ferreira, and Sean Isaacsy are the artists. But, I think those are maybe penciler and inkers. You know, so this kind of, it still continues the story that started in issue 25 with Lex getting his memories back, Mercy betrayed, you know, and Lex trying to figure out what, you know, who he is now, Lois Lane losing her powers. And this kind of concludes that because it's setting up for next issue, which is that the Dark Legion, Darkseid's Legion of Superheroes from the Absolute Universe, or I guess maybe the future of the Absolute Universe, over into the DC Universe. And meeting Superman, and that kicks off in issue 28. So this kind of wraps up essentially, you know, the story threads that have been there since the beginning of this volume of Superman. And so, Aaron, I'm curious what your thoughts on this issue were.
Well, let me ask a question before I get going. Is Joshua Williamson staying on this book, or is he transitioning off in all of the Superman creative team shuffling?
To my knowledge, he's still on the book for the foreseeable future.
Okay, well, that makes me feel better because I'm like, you know, every time they shuffle the creative team, we lose all those story threads, right? You know, because the new writer doesn't want to follow what the old writer was laying down. It's, you know, we lose continuity. I was happy to see that we resolved the issue with the gunslinger woman, spectral person. I never can remember her name.
Something Midnight or Moonlight. Yeah, that's not a character that.
Yeah, that I really dislike her resonated. I dislike her so much that I've not bothered to remember her name. But she's the one who, you know, wants to shoot Superman for whatever reason. They resolve that, and hopefully it means I don't have to see her anymore because I just really hated that character. And I just, you know, she's kind of magic, supernatural based, and, you know, it just felt out of place in the story and kind of shoehorned in. And I don't really understand what they're trying to achieve with that, but you know, she's done. Another thing that I find annoying about the storyline is that Lois is just very mad about not being Superwoman anymore. And, you know, she really had forgotten about her job as editor-in-chief of the Daily Planet and had forgotten about Jimmy in the hospital. I mean, so, you know, Lois, terrible person.
Wow, considering that was such a big deal for her, like feeling like a failure as a hero with Jimmy going in the hospital, to have forgotten it.
Yeah.
I was not happy with this book about where it was going. I didn't like the Red Kryptonite poisoning storyline. I really don't like the Luther Revenge Squad characters. And so I jumped off of it because I hated the last issue. And it didn't make me want to keep reading to see just this fight between Superman and the ghost lady that none of us can remember the name of.
Yeah. Well, you know, the things that I do like about the book, I think the book is beautifully drawn. I thought the artwork was great. Coloring was great. I mean, everything about
it's a beautiful book.
Yeah. The visual storytelling is fantastic. I just don't really care about the story that was being told, other than I like where they're going with Lex.
I do too, you know, actually.
Because I was afraid that we'd just reset him back to villain Lex. And I like that he's kind of on a road to self-determination, that he's out there trying to figure out who he is. And, you know, he gave Mercy the opportunity to come along with him. She turned him down. You know, so he's out there, you know, being lone Lex. And I kind of dig that. I also dig that we have closed out some of the storylines that I found so deeply annoying. And I like that we cut back to, you know, Booster Gold in the far future and what's going on with him and Doomsday. So I'm kind of interested on where that's going. And I hope you're right, Paul, that Joshua will stay on, plays out.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely on for the next arc. So, you know, with issue 28, again, it's Darkseid's Legion. Issues 28 through 30 are that story. And apparently it's Joshua Williamson. Dan Mora is on, the busiest guy in comics.
Yeah, right, no now. Doubt. His hand has got to hurt, right?
It's got to. Because, dude, yeah. You know, it was announced this week that he and Robert Kirkman are taking over as the creative team of the Transformers book.
I saw Skybound that.
Also, yeah. And I'm like, Transformers are hard to draw.
They are.
Yeah. But if the art already, on those, yeah. The art on the preview pages are beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, so, but yeah, I will say, even though the last few pages of this book, which lead into the next, I would say this book definitely had a stronger back half.
I agree.
The denouement of the book was stronger than the actual core story, but, you know, it put everyone where they're at. You know, some things back to status quo. Lex Luthor on his, you know, on his worldly mission and set up this Darkseid's Legion thing. And even though it featured that Doomsday Time Trapper character, I still liked these last few pages. And I'm definitely looking forward to Darkseid's Legion in the next book. I'm curious how Booster's gonna play into it and that kind of thing.
I agree. And like I said, as long as we're going to continue these stories, I feel like we've shut down the storylines that I was irritated by. And hopefully the new serving of stories will be, you know, fresh and exciting. So fingers crossed. Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, much like Lex Luthor, we get a little bit of a breather next week.
Are we getting a breather?
Comics. I mean, not a full breather. There are a couple of big releases, including the second issue of Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong Part 2. And from Marvel Comics, there is a relaunch of Captain America, this time by author, Chip Zdarsky, with art by Valerio. Is the new creative team on a new Captain America relaunch. I may give it a shot because I think I like that team up.
I think I'll jump into that with you, Paul.
Yeah, so we'll give that a shot. Other than that, relatively light week.
All right, well, it sounds like it's going to be merciful on my wallet, because this was kind of a big week. I know we only talked, but I bought a bunch of stuff this week. I had like a $45 week, I think.
Damn. So,
yeah. And Paul, I've been reading all of my stored up issues of the Star Trek comic, you know, with Ben Sisko.
We'll have to get caught up on our sister podcast, Star Trek with Aaron and Polly.
I know, because Strange New Worlds is coming. And, I've got to get over my bitter discontent with Star Trek, new Star Trek, because, you know, man, good grief. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books. Who's on your DC Mount Rushmore? We want to know. Give us a shout. ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
And you can hit us up on our social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
What a deal. Well, hey guys, we'll do this all over again next week. And, you know, we don't have to have Andrew. you know, we do this just fine without Andrew. So
I feel like, yeah. I feel like you're not fine.
I'm not fine at all. I'm broken inside.
Well, maybe we'll have him next week. We'll find out together.
Hold me, Andrew.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.